Blog Talk Radio.
Well, greetings, faithful followers. This is your old pal, Brother Jack Angry, bringing you another edition of Live from the Monastery of Mayhem. Our guest today is Claudia Christian. We've got our first caller, and I'm going to bring her online. Okay, caller, can you hear me?
I can. I'm Claudia, right here.
Yeah. Yes. Hi, Claudia. How are you doing? It's been a while since we've talked. I'm so glad you were able to give us a call. Just for anybody who is tuning in and doesn't know, our guest today is Claudia Christian, the star of the iconic sci-fi series Babylon 5, also a noted author, singer, musician, and a advocate for the Sinclair Method treatment of alcoholism. So how have you been doing, Claudia?
I've been doing great. Thank you for asking. Just busy, getting ready to head across overseas to the UK to raise some money for C3 Foundation, which is the nonprofit I started to help people with alcohol use disorder get on the Sinclair Method.
Well, yes, and our good friend and friend of the show, Ash Nong De Plume, did write a book featuring a lot of information about the Sinclair Method, and I did send you a copy of that this morning. I hope you'll, when you're over in London, you'll get a chance to look at that. He was quite
it's
impressed.
Already on my iPad.
It's
on my iPad, ready to read on the airplane. Yep.
Well, we are so happy to hear that. We hope you do like it, of course. Now, the Sinclair Method, for those of our listeners who don't know what that is, why don't you give us a brief recap of what that is.
The Sinclair Method is otherwise known as targeted pharmacological extinction, and it involves taking an opiate blocker. In the United States, you take naltrexone 1 hour prior to drinking alcohol. And it sounds counterintuitive to tell somebody with a drinking issue or an alcohol use disorder to drink, but actually it's been proven in over 120 clinical trials worldwide that it's far more effective to take naltrexone prior to drinking than it is to take it every morning and remain abstinent, which is the way a lot of doctors in the U.S. continue to prescribe it, even though the clinical scientific proof proves otherwise. So Sinclair Method, you take the pill, you wait an hour, then you drink, and within a few months, you start to notice a diminished cravings and a decrease in your drinking levels. And hopefully within 3 or 4 months, you reach targeted reach extinction. Some people take longer, some less, but usually it's around 4 months.
Okay, and on that note, I do have Ash on the other line, so I'm going to bring him in. All right. Hi, Ash. You're on the air with me, Claudia, and we have someone from the 228 area code. I'm going to bring them on as well.
Lovely. Hi.
Caller.
Hello,
you're
Claudia.
On the...
Pleased to meet you.
I'm sorry. Ash, what?
I was just saying pleased to meet you since we've never actually said hello before.
Nice to meet you too, Ash.
Sorry. All right. And I was just going to say, our other caller from the 228 area is, we're having a small problem with the system bringing them on, so what I may have to do is end the call and have them call back in.
Okay. Well, in the meantime, Claudia, I've been reading through your C3 Foundation and the other information. My day job is a science teacher, so I actually speak some of the language. I find it rather amazing and, I don't know, say scary that this has not been advertised beforehand. Do you have any ideas why this information has been almost actively suppressed?
Yeah, I do, actually. It's, first of all, it's an incredibly effective, very inexpensive treatment that you can do in the privacy of your own home. It doesn't involve cognitive behavioral therapy, psychotherapy. It doesn't involve rehab. You don't have to leave your job. You don't have to spend $1,000 a day. It has nothing to do with the multi-billion-dollar rehab industry. It's not a 12-step program, although you can combine it with that. So, honestly, to tell you the truth, it's a generic drug. There's no money in it. Why would somebody with a thriving rehab industry, a revolving door that charges $1,000, $2,000 a day, why would they advocate for a pill that costs as little as a dollar? And the more you use it, the less you need it. It would, quite frankly, put a lot of people out of business. And I'm not trying to be sensational here or anything, but I've thought about it quite often. And there's also another major reason why it's not more utilized, and that is because when it was approved by the FDA, the pamphlet, the insert in the packaging of naltrexone stated expressly that it is to be prescribed once a day with abstinence. And even though the clinical trials proved that the people who did not comply and they did drink on it did much better and reduced their drinking by a whopping 78% success rate, doctors still prescribe it. If they will even prescribe it, they'll prescribe it with abstinence, even though they know that it works better when you drink with it. And that's simply, you know, a matter of protecting themselves. And in order to get that, those instructions changed, it would cost millions, probably upwards of $20 million to get that, you know, repackaged and reformulated into something with the correct instructions on it. So right now at C3 Foundation, we're actually doing a physician's outreach program trying to identify doctors who do prescribe naltrexone and then offering them the information on how much better it works using targeted pharmacological extinction as opposed to once daily with abstinence. It's all about education.
I'm going to break in just a moment here, Claudia. I just wanted to let everyone know we do have a caller from 228 on the line with us. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself, caller, and say hello to Claudia and Ashnan DePlume.
Hi.
Hello. Nice to meet you. I'm Dawn DeVerger.
Hi, Dawn.
Dawn is a good friend of the show and is a was the organizer of the Geeknomicon horror convention. I know she's a big fan of yours, Claudia. I didn't mean to interrupt you about the your talk about the Sinclair method. And you know, me and Ash have discussed this at great length about this pill being apparently actively suppressed by the rehab industry and possibly Big Pharma itself. And you said there's no money in it. So
You can't do it in an inpatient facility if you're drinking, correct? So it has to be outpatient. You'd have to rethink the recovery industry, and that's the reason why we at C3 provide free counseling and free information. We don't believe that addicts should be penalized for their affliction. You know, we believe that they should receive the help that they deserve, and options save lives.
Well, I would absolutely agree with you. In fact,
what you said earlier, you take the pill and then you just have essentially one drink. You don't have to drink any large amount to begin to get the benefits of it. Is that right? Or
well, you don't have the compulsion. That's what it blocks the reinforcement of the endorphins. So the reward system of the brain is no longer being rewarded as much, and it's not getting any reinforcement. It's much like Pavlov's dog. You know, once the bell stopped ringing, it still kept salivating. Then once you stop feeding it, it stopped salivating. So in this instance, the more you introduce the opiate blocker to the behavior you wish to decrease or stop altogether, the more the neural pathways will revert back to normal size and diminish, and your cravings will disappear. And that's the beauty of this, is that you're not white-knuckling through your recovery. Your cravings go away. So when you do pour that drink, a lot of people find that they can't even finish that drink. They throw it away, or they'll have one or two, and they're satisfied. That's the difference. So you're shutting up that little addict brain that says more, more, more.
Isn't that what they call a keystone drug? It dovetails into the synaptic reception so that it creates a sensation, so you don't have to continue with the compulsion to drink. Smoking cessation drugs as well.
Well, yes, it's smoking, unfortunately, is a different part of the reward system. However, they use Contrave, which is the diet pill, which is naltrexone and Wellbutrin. It's been proven that also naloxone is being used for binge eating. Any opiate blocker, that's exactly right. What you're doing is you're giving the feeling that you're done, that you're satisfied with one or two drinks. That's the goal, is to return to normal, safe drinking levels, because quite frankly, abstinence is not exactly an attainable goal for a lot of people, nor do they want to give up that socialization of the occasional drink. So just like when I went to speak at the Senate this past November, we talked about harm reduction, which is much more possible. It's much more realistic for the average person. If you tell a 30-year-old person that they can never drink alcohol again for the rest of their life, it's probably not going to happen. they're probably going to drink. So let's
get at that point, it's a rebellion.
Well, let's all – yes, exactly, and they're very angry. I was a very angry, sober person. I was very resentful. So this gives you the freedom to choose. And as long as you comply, you are basically in remission from your overdoing it or binging or anything. As long as you take your medication before you drink, you're fine, which is a wonderful choice for a lot of people, people in the restaurant business, hospitality industry. And this is also wonderful for people who have to treat their addiction privately, such as doctors, lawyers, pilots, people, in law enforcement. These people all have a very pressing need for privacy. They could lose their jobs. So this is a wonderful alternative for them as well.
It would help them also find other means of cessation instead of using drinking as a stress relief. When I was a bartender, we had EMTs and police and firefighters coming in all the time after work because just the stress of what they'd seen and everything. And they saw that as the only legal option they had for de-stressing. If they were able to get something like this to help them stop drinking, then they would be able to channel those energies into more, less harmful outlets for that stress.
Absolutely. Or they could have one or they could have one or two drinks if they choose. But, if you choose to be abstinent on this program, you can also you can achieve sobriety with the Sinclair method if that's your goal. It's all up to the individual. And as we all know, everybody drinks for different reasons and everybody is a different type of drinking, which is why they don't call it alcoholism anymore. They say alcohol use disorder because it's such a spectrum. You have the daily mommy drinker, wine every night, and you've got the chronic drinker who wakes up and has to have alcohol because they're physically dependent. There's a huge range of drinkers out there, so we can't just kiddie, we can't, as I keep saying to everybody, it's not my way or the highway. I have nothing against rehab or 12-step programs if it works for the individual, but I happen to know that the addiction issue, especially with alcohol in this country and around the world, is not getting any better. So we have to have more options to treat people. And this is a clinically proven, scientifically based treatment that actually works. It has a nearly 80% long-term success rate.
Well,
that's much better than the other methods.
Yes, exactly.
Well, one of the lines from the One Little Pill documentary, which I did take a look at, was that the doctor tells the character in the documentary that their alcoholism will kill them before HIV does.
Yes,
so basically,
that's true.
I'm assuming that you're using that to illustrate that the alcoholism or alcohol use disorder is a more pressing medical issue than HIV or even cancer at this point.
Well, more people die per year, 3.3 million, not to negate the importance of any other disease or affliction that someone is suffering from. But absolutely, forget about the human cost for a moment. Let's just talk about money. I mean, the billions of dollars that are basically spent on in health insurance, car accidents, violence, let's also talk, it destroys families. The human cost is massive. But just from a dollar point of view, if I was in government, if I was running the show somehow politically, I would absolutely try and use this cost-effective treatment to reduce the sheer amount of money spent on alcohol use disorder and its destruction. And maybe, use that saved money to deal with the opiate issue in this country, which is staggering. It's a myriad of issues, and the bottom line is if 12-step programs are helping 5 to 10% of the people, that's wonderful. But what about the rest of them? What about the people who don't want to talk about things in public? What about the people who keep relapsing from rehab? You have famous people like Ben Affleck for 15 years in and out of rehab, who just recently said he just got out again. Maybe it's not working. Maybe try something else.
Well, I was going to say, I read your transcript that you wrote to you said to Congress. It's unfortunate it was on a lame duck session because, it'd be nice if they could actually pass legislation saying, doctors, I'd like you to justify why you're not using this system instead of using it. Because when I was doing some research on this, Jack had told me about this whole foundation. I'd never heard of it before and this whole drug. So I put together a couple of stories, which he had sent you, sort of as a thank you for everything you've done in entertainment. And also, to point out, when I was doing the research, I'm showing $176 billion a year are directly tied to the rehab industry per year in the United States alone. I looked at the top 190 gross national products of the world. The bottom 140, so that means only 50 nations on the planet, have more gross income than the United States spends of government money on rehab.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and by the way, it's not working. the death rate and the costs incurred are not going down. So something is wrong with this system.
Well, it could be very similar to the oil system. If you think about it, for how long were electric cars suppressed? Since 1901, the concept was around. But because the oil companies had more money, investors had more money, manufacturers had more money, they put that in. The politicians were sponsored by that same money. And the end result was everything went to the back burner. Patents were burnt, destroyed, specifically to keep the oil industry going with the diesel cars and such.
Absolutely.
And it could be the same thing. As you said, millions went into rehab. Millions went into these other programs. Insurance companies can keep people who are otherwise healthy on the hook for their insurance payments because they're covering the other thing to making it supposedly more affordable. It's a racket, and it's a large one.
It is a racket. Well, I call it the multi-billion-dollar rehab industry for a reason. See, it's a business, and I resent that business because when I did rehab, it was a colossal waste of $30,000, which I didn't have at the time, and it was a waste. It did nothing for my biological issue. It did nothing to fix my brain. It was just a self-indulgent 30 days of sitting, looking at a beautiful view, and doing Tai Chi. It doesn't fix you. I'm sorry. And I can tell you that revolving door, I don't know one person in the entire time that I've been working with people with alcohol use disorder, I don't know one person who has stayed sober after leaving rehab. Not one. Not one.
It creates codependency.
I know.
It creates codependency of feeling that you have to do it.
Yeah, mind you, I know lots of people who have achieved sobriety through the fellowship of AA and 12-step programs, but never one from rehab, from a 30-day stay. It's absurd. What are you going to do in 30 days to undo 20 years of drinking or to undo the biological issue? You know, your brain changes when it becomes dependent upon alcohol. Yeah. So
in fact, what I was reading on this stuff, you know, the people who are highly adaptable, which, you know, makes people usually very intelligent and you're good salesmen, you're very sociable types, are the ones most at risk from this because the rewards mechanism, the Skinner theories, you know, your Pavlov dogs, whatever you want to call it, but your behavioristic theories all require the person be an active participant, and they get that reward and the punishment. I mean, the entire casino industry in Nevada is built on the reward-punishment system. You know, we reward you for gambling. We punish you when you don't gamble enough. Therefore, you know, when you win, don't, you don't. This is a whole biological imperative. The victim of the alcohol use disorder, and I apologize, in the stories and books I wrote, I use the word alcoholism. We'll have to go edit
that's fine. Everybody does.
Well, I'm saying, I'm learning about this because this is there, but, you know, like I said, I have a cousin who goes through this. And, you know, once again, her court ordered this and that, and treatment specifically prohibits her from using anything with an alcohol in the treatment. So she is doomed for the next 4 or 5 years to be on this merry-go-round if she lives through it this time.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's slingshot the body, whereas what she was talking about, even though you're drinking with it, you're stepping down the amounts in your body and you're allowing your body to compensate and heal gradually so that not only the craving's down, but the body is starting to reset itself. Whereas
the
other stuff is cold turkey, the body
can't
reset itself.
The neuropathways need to be, re-educated to not use alcohol. Otherwise, what happens is somebody can be sitting 30 years sober, they get the taste of alcohol, reactivates the circuit that says I'm an addict, and they're off to the races, where if you could do the actual pharmacological extinction, where you can actually reduce and change that neural pathway. When the person is exposed to alcohol accidentally or deliberately, whatever, they're not off to the races instantly. They've got a head, you know, you got a whole lead start of time because you have to learn to be an alcoholic. You have to learn not to be an alcoholic or alcohol use dependent disorder or whatever the label of the week is. I'm sorry.
No, that's
and
okay.
I think the people, I think what happens is the sheer ignorance of people about behaviorism and how the human brain recircuits. We have plasticity and learning. I mean, we're human beings are learning machines, and we learn to be an alcoholic, and you have to learn not to be an alcoholic.
Well, that's
and the
why
idea
Dr.
that we
Sinclair
can punish it out
you,
of you.
Yeah, yeah. You unlearn
punish it out of somebody is not going to work. Yeah, this Judeo-Christian, we have to punish people out of something, doesn't work. Prohibition and punishments don't work. Re-education works, but punishment doesn't work. All you can do is treat a symptom temporarily. And near as I can tell, according to the VA and the testimony they put in backup of your Senate testimony on November, I think it was November 6th, was it? Or 17th, I can't remember the exact date this last year. They are looking at less than 6 months on rehab. You know, they have the veteran back in the system 6 months later to pay to do it again and again and again and again. And what comes down to, why can't we get Congress to say, okay, doctors, you need to justify not using pharmacological extinction?
Yes, and indeed. And on the other hand, we don't really want to make this unavailable to people. And if somebody does try to monetize it and if it loses its generic status, we could actually, you know, hurt the process of getting TSM more used in the future. So we kind of want to keep it generic, but we want to educate doctors. That's the most important thing at this point. Any sort of physician outreach program that we're doing right now is identifying doctors who actually prescribe naltrexone already and then asking them if they're open to learning about this other way of using it. And you know, getting back to the whole patent issue and the FDA issue is that the reason why it passed through the FDA was because DuPont promised to put those instructions in the package. And like I said, it would be incredibly costly to change that at this point. So we, as people in the recovery industry, really have to educate doctors. That's up to us now of saying, well, you've tried it with abstinence. It's blocking people's the good endorphins that they're doing if they're not drinking. They shouldn't take it in the morning if they're not going to drink because they're going to block their workout session or making love or playing with their kids. So let's do targeted extinction and see how it works with your patients. I've tried it with doctors, and let me tell you something. They are so enthusiastic at this point because they've now created another revenue stream for themselves. There are so many people that want to treat this privately. I have a doctor near me who has been doing now TSM for 7 years, thanks to me because he was my doctor. He probably has 300 new patients. I mean, it's sad, but on the other hand, he's treating them, and these people locally are getting the help they need in a safe environment with somebody who's not judgmental and who understands the process and sees how successful it is and sees that it's working. He sees these people two or three times, and then they never come back again. Isn't that what you want? You want them to get better. You know, you don't want to keep seeing this revolving door of the same people relapsing time and time again.
What's the possibility of getting this changed over generic?
I
mean, over the counter. What's the
it is over the counter.
It's becoming over the counter. Spain has it over the counter, and I think
and Czechoslovakia.
China has it. Mm-hmm.
Czechoslovakia, Spain. I wish to high hell that America would have it over the counter. That's one of the things that we really want to. We really want to try to get. I said that it might happen within 10 years. That was me being extremely optimistic, and that was about 5 years ago. You know, we're a small grassroots nonprofit. We only have one paid employee, and that's Jenny, who runs the office. Everything that we do basically is for free. So, you know, it's hard for us to go and advocate and you know, lobby Congress when we don't have any funds. So it's a steep road, but I have faith. I'm never going to shut up about this. So I'm at least one screaming voice.
Yeah, well,
I was impressed enough with it that I've been writing a couple of books here with Jack's character in it for a lot of fun and all that stuff that goes with his little radio show and his television stuff. And based on what he had told me, I ended up putting another story. That's what he was emailing me last night when I got the cover, actually finished up, which has your whole drug treatment, alcohol treatment thing, as a functional pillar of the story, because I think that these stories need to be told. Sometimes you have to tell them as documentary. Sometimes you have to tell it as a fiction because you can't – sometimes you have to soft pedal it. I mean, I actually agree with you on everything that I'm hearing. It's just as somebody who teaches all the time, sometimes you have to sneak the knowledge in on people because they're resistant because they think everything in the world is propaganda.
Do you know how much I've tried to get an appointment at the Writers Guild to talk to producers and writers to say, look – if somebody has an alcohol misuse issue in one of your programs, can you stop putting them in an AA meeting and maybe put them on the Sinclair Method? I mean, everybody knows about AA, but let's give us a little publicity here. You know, it's every single time you see a film or you read a book, the person is always in rehab or AA meeting. There's nothing else ever shown, not baclofen, no other medication, nothing is ever shown. So, yes, I agree with you. Yeah. It would be lovely if we could get this even into fictional stories. That would be great.
Well, what I have for you is I sent you had Jack send you the fictional story as far as that goes. How about I give it to you as a gift that you guys publish it, do whatever you want. I can put it on the EPUB and all that stuff. You keep half the money and all that stuff. I just want to make sure I continue using the characters because I created a universe I want to keep going. And
that
I don't
would be lovely.
Lose my
we could put a link to it, and we could put it up on our sites, and that would be great. Thank
you. I think this being recorded, I just contracted to give you half a book.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, that was a verbal agreement. I now own half of your book.
Yes, you do.
Oh, witness.
Yeah. So obviously, I would like some feedback, and because if there's a spelling error, you might want to tell me about it. But it's the contract process. You now own it. We need to. So at some point we'll need to email back and forth to do this because, I have the other ones up through Smashwords and they go on Barnes and Noble and iBooks. I haven't played with Kindle and the Amazon people yet, but I think that's probably the people that we need to see. Yes, but check with me later on that. And I'd put you in the same cure in another book for Jack's characters. You might want to take a look at and see if it's offensive because if it's wrong, we can always fix it. But I think this word has to get out because, like I said, I heard about this and going, how come I don't know about it? I have family with problems. I actually teach science and health for a living, and I've never heard, and I'm in the business of teaching this stuff.
Yeah. That's what I said. Education is key, and the more we spread the word and the more people go on it. I mean, at this point, I think my TEDx talk and the documentary have been reaching more people than anything at this point. But most important, we just need to keep talking about it. Cocktail parties with your friends, family. Everybody knows somebody. Yeah, everybody knows somebody who's struggled with a drink problem. I'm sure everybody knows.
Have you ever contemplated an unlikely ally in this fight? Have you ever contemplated an unlikely ally in this fight? Having been a bartender for years before I started doing anything else, you bartenders struggle with seeing people falling off the wagon and everything else, and you feel bad about it. Now, ironically, bartenders have a lot. The bar industry has a ton of publications. And they don't want to be held responsible. They have what's called the blue light, green light, where if somebody gets to a certain point, you have to take their keys, everything else, and nobody wants to go through that. It hurts business. It hurts yourself. It hurts your ego. It hurts the bartender when they find out somebody they've seen every day for years suddenly gets in a drunk driving accident. And I have seen AA ads and stuff like that in these publications. I have seen where rehab institutions like that have been advertised because they're trying to help these people. At the same time, they're like, hey, come and get a couple drinks, socialize, but stop there. And they're promoting that. Did you ever contemplate finding a network of doctors who are willing to prescribe it, making a list of some kind, and then having bartending magazines and such, or the industry magazines, not the alcohol industry themselves, but the dispersal people, put these ads in these papers that will say something? Because that way the bartender can say, hey, man, why don't we – I was just reading this. Check this ad out because we all have those copies behind the bar. And say, hey, there's a doctor in this area. Why don't you go talk to him?
I think a third of her sight
is
for that, isn't it?
Bartenders are a terrific idea. I have actually contacted a lot of liquor stores, and a few of them did respond in a positive way to have me put flyers up there, and then it kind of fell through. But I would love to put trifolds everywhere where people drink because it's not – first of all, the alcohol industry is intrigued by this because I'm not telling people to stop. I'm telling people to – we're talking about harm reduction here, and they're all for that. As you say, there's nobody in the alcohol industry who wants to create a broken home or a DUI. They want
because you're held responsible. You're legally responsible.
Right,
if a person leaves your bar
well,
and gets a DUI, you can get charged for murder.
Okay,
you want to keep the customer.
Let me break in here, guys, just a moment. They are going to cut the live feed is going to cut in about 30 seconds, but then we're going to go to what's called the after party, which is going to be about another 17, 18 minutes. And you guys have all made some really great points. I do want to take just a moment here to dedicate this podcast to a good friend of ours, Rhonda Baffis, who we know as Mr. Rhonda from the Bizarre TV Network. She is going through a bout of cancer-related illness right now, so we do wish her all the best. I also want to let Claudia know that basically what will be happening here is the film we've just released on Amazon, Angry Brothers, Boobs, Buns, and Bawdiness. We will be donating a portion of those proceeds to the C3 Foundation as well.
Oh, my goodness. That's amazing. Thank you so much.
Well, certainly.
That's incredible.
I mean, we've just released it. I mean, we're going to be really intensifying on our marketing here, but, you know, we want to make sure that we can get you something every month.
Yeah.
I can't guarantee it'll be a huge amount, but we're definitely on board with you, Claudia. And, you know, I had an uncle who was a high-functioning alcoholic for many years, and, you know, it did lead to his eventual death. And, you know, so, I mean, we can't save those people, but maybe we can try to save a few more. I also wanted to mention to Claudia about a town here in Nebraska called White Clay. It is just borders the Santee Indian Reservation. They have 4 operating liquor stores in this town that sell over 4 million cans of beer to the Santee Reservation. Now, why can't we get a a Native American physician to maybe go to White Clay, talk to these people, and maybe try to, you know, reach out to these people with a cure. I mean,
one of my dreams was to open a clinic on any or all of the Native American reservations in the U.S. After introducing them to this virtual poison. Native Americans can't process alcohol the same way as people of European ancestry, and it's devastating to them as a culture and as a people. So I would love to educate them. It's just, once again, it comes down to funding. I can't go to Rosebud Reservation and open a clinic because we don't have the funding. But yes, would I like to go to that reservation you just mentioned? Absolutely. Would I like to do talks? Sure. I would love to just go in and talk to the doctors and tell them about it, and bring them the book, and bring them the literature. Yeah,
well,
absolutely.
Would you let me do this here? Your documentary, One Little Pill. Would you let me feature that on my TV show? I mean, we can at least get it run here in Omaha on the public access. I mean, we do primarily like schlock horror films, but we would really like to feature this.
Please, I give you full-on permission. I'll even send you a DVD if you need it. I mean,
that would be wonderful. That was my next request.
Just email me the address to send it to.
All right, I will drop that in the mail today, or in the email today. Also, what I'd like to do is, I mean, I have the podcast we did from 2 years ago and this one. I'd like to go ahead and email them to you. Maybe you can put them up on your website and people can listen to this.
You bet we will. You bet we will. Just send us the links.
Yeah. I have another question. I was looking at your website this morning, prepping for all this. How come you don't, or maybe you've tried it. I mean, how come I hear about this keychain? How come I can't buy one on your website, or just never thought about putting it for sale there? Or was there a different marketing or shipping problem? I would think the keychains and T-shirts.
To buy what?
You can
order them. There's a keychain program, and there's also, you can order the DVD, or you can rent it at onelittlepillfilm.com, and then you can order the keychain.
I bought your film and threw an extra $5-6 on it to make it come out to even amount. No, I was just like, it wasn't obvious for me looking for it how to buy that keychain. Not that I.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You know,
yeah. Well,
just need to talk about it at some point. And, you know, make that a little bit more in your face. Hey, by the way, spend the money here. The other thing I found about was the Smile program on Amazon. You're signed up for it. I changed my thing from Red Cross to this, but we need to encourage people to put you on the Amazon. Yeah, but we need to get the word out to this change over at Amazon.
Yeah.
Please change over to the Smile program to start throwing money at the C3 so this can be done, because I don't know of anybody who is not biologically related to somebody with an alcohol problem.
I know. That's
my mother was an alcoholic.
Brother or sister. Yeah, I mean, I got cousins all over the place that I can definitely say for sure. And, you know, I suspect that one of my grandfathers may have had a problem, but, you know, he passed away when I was young enough that you can't really, you know, double check. But I don't know of anybody who can say, oh, no, my family's has never been harmed.
No,
by
never.
This. I don't think we can get that rumor going. I don't even think the most hypocritical person can get that lie going.
Let me just break in here a moment. Now, I know Dawn does a lot of writing for quite a few different blogs and organizations. Is that right, Dawn?
Not as much blogs as magazines and various other review situations, short stories, that sort of thing.
Well, then let me put you on the spot a minute here, and I hope you don't take this the wrong way, but
okay.
I'd like to have you coordinate with Claudia maybe to get some articles put together so you could possibly publish these in some of the magazines you write for. Would that be doable?
It would. I would just need to be put in touch with her. I don't have her contact information. Or you could just give her mine. I know you have it. Mm. Just give her my number, my email address, and everything. I'd be more than happy to.
That'd be great. Thank you.
I will go ahead and do that. But you know, just to, you know, I know we've primarily focused in on the Sinclair Method and your alcohol use issue, you know, your advocation of that. But let's take a moment to just find out a few other things. How is the book, Babylon Confidential, how is that all going?
Babylon Confidential came out in 2012, and it's doing really well. It was the first step in helping people. Before I made the documentary, I wrote the book about it. Wolf's Empire was the first foray into fiction with my partner Morgan Grant Buchanan, and that came out in July. That's a science fiction alternate history of a Rome that never fell. It's called Wolf's Empire.
I have to find
that. I did the Audible
version.
Female
protagonist. I've only gotten through a few hundred pages, though.
Yeah, it's a long book. It's about 25 hours of audio, Audible listening. But
wow.
It's a darn good book. I'm very proud of it. And we're working on a new series, my partner and I, which will come out by the end of this year, the first book of that series. Although I don't want to talk about it yet because somebody might steal it. So Tor will be releasing that as well. Other than that, I've still, you know, I do lots of voices for games. I'm working still on Guild Wars 2, and I just did Fallout 4 and World of Warcraft.
Oh.
So I do a lot of voices, and then other than that, I do, you know, the occasional convention to raise funds for C3, so that's why I'm heading off to Europe for the next month. I'm going to try and raise some money by selling off memorabilia that people have graciously donated to me. So I basically go to conventions and I auction off this stuff and then raise money.
You just completed a convention. How did that go for you?
I was in Lexington, Kentucky with my co-star Bruce Boxleitner, and it was wonderful. It was a great convention. It was a Lexington Comic-Con. Kudos to them. They threw a wonderful event, lots of people. Very well organized, lovely volunteers, and Bruce and I got to sit next to each other, and, you know, we get along great, so we just laughed the whole weekend. It was really a lot of fun.
He's coming
to Telford, too. I'm going to see him in England. He's going to go to do the FCD event in Telford, yeah.
Oh.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
And we all do want to... you know, extend our deepest sympathies on, you know, Jerry Doyle, his, you know, recent passing here. I mean, that was a big shock to all of us. I mean, I've always enjoyed his radio program and, you know, his book and the work he did on Babylon 5.
It was devastating. He was a dear friend.
I have another question. When they did the Babylon 5, they always did the story arc about Garibaldi having his alcohol problem and all that stuff. Was that actually always done as part of this Jerry Doyle thing, or was pointed at you?
No, I didn't have an alcohol issue, misuse issue when I did Babylon 5. It didn't come in.
Okay.
I was in my 20s during that show. Mine didn't creep in until my late 30s, early 40s. And Jerry did not have an issue when he was doing Babylon 5 either. Nobody had any addiction issues. Not even Jeff Conaway during the series.
So that was just
It was just a coincidence. It was just a coincidence. I mean, listen, mind you, we all partied, and we were young.
Yeah.
We could go to conventions and drink, but none of us had addiction problems at that point. They crept in later in life, which they usually do.
Yeah. No, I was just kind of curious if that was done for entertainment, the storyline, or if that was just done as sort of a side thing from
I don't think anybody would be as mean to make a personal nod to a person suffering. Like, I certainly don't think Joe Straczynski ever would have dreamt.
I wasn't saying as a oh, because we have somebody doing this, why don't we address the issue because this is important. I was thinking more of a positive line. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to imply anything negative about the producers.
Oh, no. I'm just saying when they implied that he had an alcohol issue, nobody knew that he would eventually have one. And if they did know that he had one at the time, I don't think anybody on that show ever would have written a character with an addiction problem. You know what I'm saying? So no, it was a coincidence.
No.
Yeah, it was a complete coincidence.
But, you know, the writing...
That was my big question, as somebody who watches the show.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
Well, the writing that Straczynski did was always wonderful. I mean, all through six seasons of Babylon 5, even into... I assume that he was responsible for Crusade and the movies, but I mean his writing style was always solid and always spot on through the whole thing.
Oh yeah,
he's
a wonderful writer. Yeah, he's an amazing writer. He wrote beautiful characters, and we're all very, very grateful. I just heard from Peter Jurassic yesterday, and he said, you know, we were really lucky, and it's true. We were very lucky to be on such a well-written show with such wonderfully dynamic, well-rounded characters.
Yeah, one of the things I always enjoyed is I used to teach at the University of Nebraska at Omaha, and at the time, the guys who ran the video toasters, which is your special effects people, used to consult with the computer department at UNO, who would then check with us in the physics to make sure the science is right. And it was always nice to say, finally, somebody on a sci-fi show actually checking, hey, did we go sideways? You know, did we do this island Earth routine?
I always love that aspect.
Yeah, because this island Earth always upsets the entire science fiction community, where they named a cat Neutron because he was so positive. Yeah, groans everywhere.
Oh. Well,
So it's like it was nice that somebody actually checked their science, because it makes very little difference to the story to get it right, but it really screws it up if you get it wrong.
Well,
and almost every science teacher out there
would answer
your question.
It makes it more positive when there's real science and such involved.
Yeah.
Well, let me
mention
here they're probably going to cut us off in about 2 or 3 minutes, so I do want to thank Claudia and Ash and Dawn so much for calling in, and this has been a really fantastic show. Claudia, thank you so much, and yes, I will send you that email and an address to mail me that video, and we will get it on the show here in the coming weeks.
Lovely.
You know,
thanks for having me on the show, and it's nice to talk to you, Dawn and Ash. Thank you so much.
It was nice to meet you,
certainly.
And thank you for all your work on this.
Thank you. Have
yes.
a lovely weekend, everybody.
And we'll send you some follow-up information
to
get it all right.
You know,
bye-bye.
We'll hopefully be able to get in touch with you again for another follow-up show.
Oh, absolutely. That'd be lovely. Thank you so much.
All right.
Okay.
Well, thank you all so much. And this has been live from the Monastery of Mayhem. And remember, let's keep America on top. Everyone, watch Horror Hosts. Good night.
Good night or morning? Different time zones.
All right. Well, that was really, really great, people. All right.
I think they're going to cut you off any second, so why don't we just get back on the regular lines and we can do the cleanup on the business stuff, because I guess we need to send some emails back and forth to get all the paperwork right.
And don't forget to give her my information, so
yep.
I can try to do what I can.
Well, just give me a minute, guys.
Okay.
Okay. I just want to make sure I got Claudia's updated number, and I did. So yes, I will go ahead and I will send that to Dawn, and I will send my information to her. But you guys did a great job. Thank you all so much.
Okay.
Thanks
we'll
for having
later
us.
Then. Bye-bye.
All right.
Bye.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.